Brian from our sales office.
Yeah!
I'm an Agony Brian. I want to thank God for His grace. I'm really grateful to be clean and be at this convention. I've been coming to this convention. When I first came here, I had hair on my head and I couldn't grow it on my face. Right? So now the whole thing has kind of turned around. It's nice to just be in the care of the Love of the Fellowship in Ocean City, Maryland, for another year. So I want to thank the committee and everybody who's put this together, man. Give you guys a round of applause. You know, and I had it was like a few months ago, I had one of my sponsees who does not live in Philadelphia, and he thought it'd be like a good idea to get together and do step work this morning. And so, like, you know, like when people ask you to do stuff months in advance, it always sounds like a good idea. So he was like, you know, we'll get up extra early, and if you know me, I don't get up extra early for much. But 4 months ago, it sounded great. You know, so I woke up this morning at 5:30. We got together, we sat on the beach and did some step work. That was the first time for me. He said it went really well, so that's what's up. You know, because I'm like easily distracted. There's like seagulls and, you know, waves and people are taking pictures and, you know, so I'm just all over the place. I need like a quiet room, you know. So I say all that to say that I've been up since 5:30 in the morning and that'll really go good for me. So, you know, but I'm extra excited to be here, man. It's always an honor when somebody asks me to share. You know, when anybody asks me to do anything, when any one of y'all call me on the phone or send me a text or come over to me and my wife's house or you want to go to the diner with me or anything, I'm excited just the fact that people want to be around me, right? And so I'm really extra honored, man. I don't really take this up here for granted. I don't get extra excited for the, you know, because for a long time, this up here, you know, like, I always try to pay attention to the fact that this could become, because you hear people share, the mic became a crack pipe, and I was addicted, and, you know, I had to, like, bring myself down, and, you know, like, I thought I was better then because of the commitments, but, so I always was on the eye and the lookout for that, but I never was really paying attention to the fact that maybe that I felt less than, and at some points in my clean time, I needed this just to get back to zero, right? So I was always looking for the thing to not, you know, I thought I was going to be better than, but really I just needed to get to zero. So I'm excited that that's not the situation in my life today, right? You know, whether I need, you know, people ask me to come or not, I'm excited just to be in people's lives, right? I'm excited to still be alive. I'm excited to be semi-healthy, right? I say that because one of my contacts is busted, so I can't really see like this side of the room tonight, right? So I'm semi-healthy, yeah. I'm excited to be semi-healthy and here, right? So the topic is hurt people, hurt people. And then it says something about counterfeit before. I don't even know what the fuck that is even about, right? So you can ask Sherman after the meeting what the counterfeit part meant, you know. But I am in touch with what hurt people means. I'm in touch with, through the 12 steps, you know, the brokenness that exists in me even after the journeys through the 12 steps. You know, I can still touch base with the shame and the self-hatred and the voice, you know, like that comes up on me on any given day with no permission, no invite, and just says, you ain't shit, you don't measure up, and you ain't never going to be good enough. Right, so you might as well bail on this whole life that, like, that you frauding your way through, because eventually they're gonna find out that you ain't shit, right? You know, so I know that that idea is no longer the truth, and when I look back to when I got clean, my clean date's March 28th, 94. You don't gotta clap or be impressed. Clap your own clean date, right? I can't believe I ain't used drugs, right? I've made all the mistakes since 3/28/94, except for don't use drugs and come to NA meetings. The rest of them I've made, right? Name whatever you're thinking, the mistakes that I've made that one, right? The one that you think about right now, right? You know, so, but despite all that, just staying in the middle of the boat with the people and making meetings regularly and not using drugs has afforded me a lot of opportunities. You know, but I remember when I got clean and I was listening to y'all and hearing y'all share and hearing the good speakers and seeing all the people, and I thought, man, this is like a really fantastic place to be. And you guys really got your stuff together after coming. I believe that you use drugs the way I used them. What I didn't believe was that you were really actually like me, and I was really 100% sure that no matter how much work I ever did, I could have 37 sponsors, I could do all the step work, I could write like a poet, and it could be beautiful, and have the greatest metaphors and similes, and, you know, everybody could love me, but at the end, I was going back, because that's just where I come from. The hopelessness that the disease of addiction had sold me a long time ago, I bought all the way in on, right? All the way in. You know, that shame thing. See, I had to start, I got a sponsor, I got a home group, and I started doing step work. And I started to identify the hurt through the 12 steps, the hurt, the difference between the shame and the guilt. I used to toss shame and guilt around like they was the same things, right? Like guilt was like, you know, guilt is, you caught me, you know I'm caught, I know I'm caught, and now I feel some stuff as a result of that process. Shame says, you are a piece of junk for no apparent reason. There's no real rational way to tie the reason I believe that I ain't nothing, right? There ain't no real rational explanations to give you for me to tell you that I really don't measure up, but I just know it inherently in my gut that there's going to be areas of my life that I'm never going to excel in. And as a result of feeling this way, there's some rules that come, you know, have to be in play when I'm feeling this. The first rule says, don't tell nobody you think that way, right? Because y'all ain't telling me that you think that way. And if you ain't saying that you think that way and feel that way, then I ain't going to tell you that I think and feel that way. So we just going to be in here just kind of like, yo, check out my new job and my new girl, my wife and my car. And, yo, did you hear my last 3 speaker tapes? You know, they asked me to guard beware. You know, my sponsee family. They're the best sponsee family in the world. You know, and I start, and the disease hands me stuff in my clean time to hide behind the fact that even though I got this all built up, I'm still not sharing exactly what's going on. You know, so I have to build this wall, right? This self-centeredness, right? It's littered in our literature. You know, we are often the last ones to know. You know, self-centeredness protects us from being able to see who and what we become. You know, I was talking to my sponsee earlier, and we were talking about that self-centeredness, that it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like one-way glass, right? It's kind of like you in a prison, you get interrogated, and they can see in on you, but you can't see in on them, right? So I got this self-centeredness. I always thought the self-centeredness was to protect me from being able to let you know what was going on with me. That's what self-centeredness does. It gives me this wall that I can protect the public from knowing what's going on with me personally. Right? But so it's this one-way wall that exists in between me and you. The problem is that in order to hold on to this hurt and keep it locked in, I gotta keep the wall going. So it's kind of like self-centeredness. I'm just hiding behind my wall with grenades. I'm picking up the grenades. I'm just lobbing them over the wall. I can't self-centeredness protect me from being able to see the destruction that's going on the other side of the wall as a result of the behaviors that I got going on the inside. And then I start saying funny stuff, right? You know, I remember, you know, I've been in like the most psychotic relationships you can imagine. You know, like intimate ones, like sexual relationships. We ain't talking about friends. You know, I've been in those kinds too, but I'm talking about specific intimate relations with women. I've been in the most psychotic situations you can imagine because I was in them, right? I don't know about them. Like, all them chicks are married and found people to spend the rest of their lives, but I was in them, right? And I was, because I would take hostages. I needed hostages. Well, I would get in a relationship. You ever been in a relationship and like, someone's like, what are you doing with this girl? I'm like, I don't know, I don't even like her. They're like, well, why have you been with her for 4 years? Right? Like, I've stayed with people for years that I clearly, and everybody knew, I was not interested at all. I was forced to stay in these toxic, you know, maniacal things, but I would call it, you know, it's kind of like active addiction. Like, you know, you could have caught me spreading a lot of lies in Narcotics Anonymous when I got clean, and for me, my like first 5-10 years, I would say slick stuff like, I really love using drugs. I loved it. It was the greatest thing. I felt good. It allowed me to become, you know, I could fly faster than a speeding bullet, and I could dance better. I was sharper, talk slicker. Drugs was great, but, you know, the overdoses, the jail sentences, the weighing 99 pounds, the seizures, the strokes, you know, the being broke, the complete hopelessness and abandonment, the unconscious spirit that was the drugs that put to sleep. Besides that part, everything else about using was great. Loved it. You know, so I got a chance to start to invest in the 12 steps with a sponsor and started to see the problem with this hurt that I had and how this hurt would keep me trapped in the most psychotic relationships with people. Not just, now just not the women, but everybody. Friends, you know, people in the fellowship, people outside of I was locked into craziness with people because I confused, and the disease of addiction would take the word love and morphed it in my mind. You know, it took love, or the word obsession and compulsion, and morphed into love. I was never in love with using drugs. The first step said you was compulsed to continue despite everything happening to you that you didn't want to have happen. Well, I fast forward into my clean time. I'm like, man, I really love this girl. You are, big, you do not love this girl. You don't even like her. You're compulsed to continue and obsessed with the way that thing makes you feel, and you will do anything to keep that thing on you. Anything. Listen, I don't know about, I'll do anything to anybody in my clean time. I don't need no drugs to be a whole animal up in here. Listen, I'm talking about I will stab my own mom in the neck for 1 minute of relief of who it is to be me when I'm not connected to the spiritual principles in the 12 steps. Yeah. Listen, maybe you don't know that about you yet, right? But you just keep coming back. Right? Because as I started to journey through the 12 steps and I start to see, like, you know, the drugs was just this little, you know, it was a major problem when I was using them. It was just one little, you know, one tentacle, one little piece that the disease had to rope me around the neck with. And then I got the drugs off, and I bought into the hype of celebrating the clean date and putting all the reverence into the date, right? Like March 28th, man, as long, you know, they clean the day one. Just don't use drugs. Do anything. Rob them, lie, cheat, steal. It don't matter. Just don't give the date up. Right? And while I'm so busy, and y'all are fucking with me too with this, right? Just protect the date, right? That while you and me and us are so busy protecting the date, I'm being outflanked by the disease of addiction. You know, if I talk about stuff like this, you know, I did step work like in the 90s, so I'm good now. You know, I don't need to do that step work. I did step work in the 90s. Nah, it's cool because, like, you know, in my 11th step told me to, like, go outside of NA and visit some other places. And now I've been visiting some other places outside of NA for my spiritual condition. And it's a spiritual program. And while recovery, you know, while absence is the beginning, our only hope for recovery is a profound emotional and spiritual change. So I'm just doing what you told me to do and going somewhere else that's not here. And I'm good there. So I kind of elevated above the stuff that y'all newcomers need to do in NA, and I don't need to really take another look. I don't really need to re-journey through the steps. I did a 4-step before. You know, I know the patterns of living. This stuff rolls on in my head until I get the opportunity, and the disease addiction presents me with, do this one thing and don't tell nobody. It whispers in like the most beautiful voice I've ever heard. It's like the softest touch. It's like the thing that says, it's all going to be all right. I got you. Don't tell anybody. And then I do one. I just do one. I didn't even talk about drugs. I just do one. And you know what happens when I do one? Nothing. I do the one. And check it out. I show up to my home group, the No Nonsense group, inner city area, Greater Philadelphia region, B and Lehigh, 7 o'clock, 2-hour meet, no break, come through. Right? Talk to my home group on a Friday night after I just quietly did one. Everybody's hugging me. What's going on? I'm still standing by the door, hugging everybody when they come in. Me and Uncle Charlie are still setting chairs up. You know, it's all good. Sponsor's still doing step work. People are still calling me. I'm still calling people. And months and months go by. See, the disease of addiction, it ain't that I don't have no control. The disease of addiction will give me a little bit of control to make me think I got all the control, just to find out later I got no control. Right? Check it out. A little bit of control to think I got all the control. You know what it's like when you think you got all the control? Now I'm making moves out here. Now I start feeling myself a little bit. You know, like my partner, you know, my business partner, she ain't in NA, and I'm the money handler. I don't know how that happened, right? But I'm the money handler. I talk to the clients. I live in Philly. She lives in Atlanta. She don't really know what I'm charging the client. When she got with me, she was only asking for $500, right? I moved her up to $5,000, right? So I could take $2,000 off the $5,000 and tell her we got $3,000 and only give her $1,500. That's 300% more than $500. We're good. She's winning, right? Just the little stuff. Right? It's all good. You know, until I start taking these little risks, and then I find myself, listen, you ever like been somewhere, like, you know, you going out, like, you know, you about to make a move, you know, I often attribute to like stuff. I remember like when I was newer-ish, and I was in a relationship, and this girl asked me to do an H&I commitment. You know you're wrong when you can't tell your girl that this other girl asks you to do something, you're going to do something with this other girl, you can't tell your girl, you already fucked up, right? Like, it's already bad. So, you know, like, I go out with the other girl, the H&I commitment, and in my mind, I'm saying, I'm failing to recognize that I have this dilemma with obsession and compulsion. You know what I'm saying? So it's like I'm out with the other girl, you know, and I'm saying I'm going to do the H&I commitment and go home. But that's like the next thing you know, you wake up the next day and you don't even know what happened. Like, how did I even get to... Compulsion says... I tie compulsion a lot to, like, dope use. Right? Because it's easy to see in the dope game when you got compulsion. It's easy to see. Can't stop once you start. It's hard to spot. It's easy to talk about obsession in my clean time. The compulsion is sometimes difficult to see when I'm not using drugs until it's all over. You know, so I want to just fast forward to right now in my life, to the right now, because, you know, I don't know if you've ever been, I don't know how many bottoms you've ever hit in your clean time. Right, I don't know if you ever felt like you couldn't walk out your house with decades clean. I don't know if you've ever felt like a complete fraud and a failure in NA, surrounded by people who are identifying with you, right? They say, yo, I'm you, you're me, I've done that, we've done that, but there's still that thing on you that says, no, 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 I'm worse, right? So I want to give you hope, though. I was feeling that way last November. Right? Where everything in my life was in shambles. So what do we do when everything's in shambles? Anything. Listen, I'll talk about I began a process of doing anything. Anything it takes. You want me to go to more meetings, you want me to rewrite this 4-step, you want me to read any book, you give me any book. I'll read any book. Any book, I don't care what it is, right? You want to give me some Dr. Seuss shit? You tell me that's going to get better? I'll read the Hop on Pop all day. Right? I'm talking about anything to get better. And listen, the hope is this. Is that when you do the work, things get better. Right? It's 5 months later in my life. And I'm telling you my... You know, the 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening. Right? As a result of the 12 steps. We try to carry this message to act and practice these principles in all our affairs. Having had a spiritual awakening. So if you're saying that as a result of this I'm going to awaken, that means before I'm awake, I was asleep. So if you're like me, I have a dilemma with treating people in my life like they should be awake when I know they're still asleep. Right? Like if my spirit's not awakened till I get to the 12th step, and you're on a second step for the first time, I shouldn't be treating you like you had an awakening in the 12th step. You know, so I've been doing this work to reawaken, right? Because somebody said earlier, you know, there's not different levels. There is different levels, right? Because I got married. Listen, I'm so in love with my wife. I can't even believe she puts up with me. I mean, that whole thing is a whole miracle, you know, in and of itself. I ain't saying that for the points. I ain't going to get the points. She ain't going to give me the points, right? You know, my wife ain't going to give me points. But I'm saying that it's a miracle that she has dealt with me this long. I'm talking about from the beginning. When we got together, this was a lot. We were hanging out. It was like a Wednesday night, right? It was later, right? It was nighttime. You know, and I said, you know what? You live in, you have to know, like, you know, she lived in Northeast Philly with like a little yard and stuff, nice house, like a garage. You know, it's a row home, but it's a nice row home. And I lived in South Philly on Broad Street. You know, the Phillies had just won. I'm just down there. I go to the diner a lot. I make 7 meetings a week. And it was Wednesday night, and in my spirit, it said, man, you want to grow up. You want to be a husband. You want to be somebody that somebody else can rely on. What came out of my mouth was, you should get with a dude who's in a union or something. Right? You know, you should find a union guy, because I'm like, you know, like my money game's jammed up. I ain't had a boss since 2002. That looks really good sometimes. Sometimes it looks really bad. Right? You know, so you should just, you know, go find somebody who, you know. But there was something about her that saw something in me that she knew something about me that I wasn't really aware of yet, right? She knew that I was worth investing time in. She knew that she could see something in me that was there that the shame and the hurt didn't allow me to see, right? And so, listen, there ain't nothing like being mad. Listen, it's a motherfucker being married. Some of y'all make that stuff look really good. Y'all are like marriage pros out here. I'm an extra rookie. Like, I'm not even like Ben Simmons rookie. Like, Ben Simmons in the second year was his first year playing. I'm like Ben Simmons last year, right? Like, on the bench, like hurt, right? Like, busted ankle, can't even get in the game kind of rookie, right? Like, yo, help me out, right? And when I don't, and I don't want to say that because I want to be what I see y'all being. And if you're like me, you know, when the 6-step talks about, we just try to, you know, like kind of decisively decide that we don't have defense. I just be trying to just like, oh, no, I don't got that problem. That ain't my problem. Being a good husband, that's your problem. I am a good husband. I just still think with 24 years clear, I just say some shit that'll just make me be. That'll just make me be that. I'm a good husband, hard worker, pay my bills on time, right? That's what I do. I don't know what y'all be doing. But when on the low, what I need to be doing is telling y'all that, like, yo, congratulations, buddy. You got 3 years clean, and you're a great husband, and you pay all your bills on time, and you figured that out, and you're not thinking about how to rob the convention with the registration money on the out of the way. I think that's got to be in one car. It's going to be a lot of money. They probably invite me back after that, but I'll tell you, I put some good thought into boosting the convention money. Right? That's a nice come-up. We'll get to that later. I'm just telling you that these are the kind of things that I spend time thinking about. I don't necessarily think about, you know, if I work 60 hours, I could get the time. That ain't my deal. You know, so, but it's important for me to share that stuff because the message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way. A new way. The new way ain't just about the new way in comparison to active addiction. The new way is like, yo, you can have a new way right now. with whatever your, let's check it out, whatever your struggle is, whatever your obsession is, whatever your compulsion is, whatever sick, twisted, maniacal nonsense that you are sure that we're not going to be able to identify with or understand, whatever rut you're in, no matter how high your debt is and how low your funds are, no matter what the situation is, you can get better. And it could be better like quick, right? And a turnaround time is extra impressive. Right? No, check it out. 5 months ago, I was going to fucking hang myself in my shed. No, check it out. I was going to hang myself in my shed, man. Because I hated the person that I had become. And the things I'm willing to do to the people who love me. I'm talking about, listen, it will be better for you guys. Look, this is how self-centered we are. It will be better, it would be self-centered of you to not want me to kill myself. Because if you knew what it was like to feel the way I feel, you would co-sign the hanging. That's where I was. Listen, I'm talking about, I wrote this shit down after that. That was November 14th. I'm telling you, by about December 27th, I felt 1,000 times better. You know, check it out. That's like 40 days. Now, I'm not telling you that I was better. I'm just talking about that piece had come off, right? That the piece of you ain't worth it, your family would be better if you were dead, you know, the fellowship would be better if you weren't around, because like that part was off me. 45 days, you know what I'm saying? And so what we do is we just continue to put one foot in front of the other. Listen, I might be, you know, I don't know if I'm ever gonna be the hard worker. I don't want to say I'm lazy. I just, you know, I be getting the money and I be chilling. You know, like, I get a big job, and I feel like I just won the Powerball, and, you know, I'd be wanting to chill. But I know that there's room for improvement in my life there. Right? So I know I just got, it's a hurt people. That, you know, at first I thought, that topic's bullshit. You know what I mean? Hurt people. Everybody hurts everybody. That's what I think. Right? Everybody hurt, you know, sometimes on purpose, sometimes an accident. But the hurt piece, I have to hurt you if I'm hurt. Because the hurt in me says you need to be alone. And the disease needs to isolate me in order to help justify one more something. And the 12 steps heal the pain. You know, the 12 steps heal the pain. The 12 steps helped me identify with what it was that put me in the position to feel like I need one more something anyway. Right, the 12 steps helped me identify. Like, I remember, like, you know, I tell a story all the time. I remember, you know, when I was a kid, I had a skateboarding accident. I broke my ankle, right? I broke my ankle, and it didn't heal right. And that was in, like, 86. And then in 96, 97, I got 3 years clean. It starts raining, and there's a storm. And I wake up out of my bed and do all, like, my ankle buckled, right? And I was limping, and I didn't know what the pain was from in my ankle until I sat back and remembered and thought, oh yeah, I had this injury, this thing happened to me in my past, right? And it wasn't addressed correctly. So anytime a storm comes, right, when the storm in my life hits, it activates old injuries that have not been addressed correctly. And what the 12 steps allow me to do is to revisit the old injuries and heal them correctly. What's the name of the guy that's called? Surgery of the spirit, man. I need to go inside. I need to fix the brokenness. The people in my life deserve it. I don't deserve it. You deserve it. My sponsees deserve it. My wife deserves it. My son deserves it. So my hope is that if you're new, right? If you're old, if you're in between, if you're old and new, right? If you new but old, right? We got all those combinations of people in here, right? Don't be scared to tell the whole truth. Tell the whole, listen, I'll say it to be quiet. The first and mandatory rule of protecting the hurt and protecting me from getting better, the disease is number one. The number one thing it's got is don't tell the whole truth. Put a cut on it. You tell half the truth. I can tell my man BK half at the book study, and I'll call Sean and tell him the other half and think I got two halves in the street, that equals a whole, I'm going to be good. It's a lie, right? It don't work like that, Brian. I got to tell the whole truth. And the people and God, I don't got to decide, you know, you hear, I say funny stuff. Like, I'm going to pick who, you know, I want this dude to be in my life and I can't mess with him because he's crazy. And I just want to be with God-fearing people, you know, and I need to run around with the people who are trying to lead the program. And this one ain't trying to lead the program. But the third step says that my job is to turn my will, my life over to God's care. Right, so if I really am turning my will, my life over to God's care, then what I'm doing is I'm trusting that God is going to put the people in my life that He wants to be in my life, and I don't got to make a decision who's too sick or who's too healthy. I don't got to decisively, like, who the fuck gave me the power to be to sit at home with my pen? Like, nah, this one's too sick. Nah, she's no good. Who gave, listen, I don't have the ability to do that. I got to believe that God is going to put the people in my life that He wants them in when He wants them in there. Sometimes that's challenging. Sometimes that's difficult. Like, I don't want to be hugging the drunk-ass dude that be rolling around, you know, the floor at meetings in North Philadelphia. If you're from Philly, you know what I'm talking about. Dude be coming in drunk. He been coming to meetings drunk for like 30 years, right? I got 25 and seen him drunk since I've been clean. He comes in drunk every meeting, rolls around on the floor, raises his hand, asks you for a cigarette, curses you out, threatens you, and leaves, right? Like, I don't know. Sometimes, like, I don't know, like, the one time when I was driving down Lehigh Avenue and I seen the dude walking, right, and I was at the light, you know, and I didn't want to look at him because he was going to know me. And I looked at him and he knew me. You know, I put him in the front seat of my car and drove him down. And I said, don't fucking touch nothing, Les. Don't touch nothing. I mean, be in the car, relax. I'll give you a cigarette when we get out. But it's not up to me who God is going to say is in my life. Because if y'all would have treated me like that, I would have been dead a long time ago. You know, so I'm just grateful, man. I'm grateful to be clean and have another shot. I'm grateful for all the love I have in my life, man. You guys are the best. Thanks for listening.